Neuroscientific Insights into Effective Narratives. Advanced quality intelligence and analysis are core competencies in narrative development and operational success. Researchers have made significant progress in exploiting data from social networks and various other sources to yield rich insights regarding communication preferences and opportunities for disseminating narratives. Yet these technological achievements, combined with knowledge gained from in-depth analysis of historical accounts of effective military information operations, are not sufficient to inform today's challenges to narratives. One critical gap in understanding narratives is the inability to predict how people react to specific, operationally relevant narrative messaging. Effective narratives are those that produce the desired behavioral outcome. From an operational perspective, then, it is necessary to construct narratives whose behavioral impact can be predicted and measured. In this section, neuroscientific research related to persuasive communication in general is discussed. Although the research was not specifically conducted on the narrative systems of concern to this work, the evidence is nonetheless an aid to better understanding the relationship between strategic communication and behavioral outcomes. The final part of this section reviews neuroscience research more concretely related to how people cognitively process narratives. In crafting an effective narrative, one must understand the audience's motivation, bias, and disposition, as well as their communication preferences. The insights greatly improve the generation and dissemination of effective narratives. Consider the implications of an operator who is equipped with the knowledge, skills, and tools to leverage intelligence about all of the following: key stakeholders or a community of interest, narrative elements and strategies, interaction of people's attitudes, beliefs, and past or current behaviors in response to various messaging, and measures of effectiveness. These capabilities would enable more accurate generation, dissemination, and evaluation of narratives, as well as course correction of information operations. Tactically efficient, effective, and measurable narratives would be deployed. In this regard, non-kinetic approaches can effectively nest with more kinetic approaches. The neuroscience community is trying to illuminate the underlying neural processes of persuasion, particularly those associated with specific behavioral outcomes. The research is helping to identify which components of narratives reliably activate particular parts of the brain. Identifying the area of brain activation helps predict behavioral outcomes because certain behaviors are expected according to the area of the brain being activated. Interpreting and translating this research for the information operations community better equips policymakers and operators to design narratives that prompt a desired behavior. Persuasive communication and behavioral outcomes. Neuroscientific approaches are an important contribution to understanding narratives and persuasive communication. The research incorporates experimental design missing in much of the social science research available. The methods used offer greater insight into the underlying brain activity and biophysical responses, for example, cardiovascular, electrodermal, neuroendocrine, and eye movement behaviors that occur when an individual engages with messaging or communication. Investigators have used this approach to examine questions about motivation, emotion, decision-making, economic exchange, trust, perceived expertise, social isolation, and group influence as moderators of behavior. Experts are theorizing about what makes a message effective for small groups by studying the neurobiology of an individual. The neuroscience-based communications literature describes biobehavioral and other measures being used to validate self-reported behavioral changes. Objective measures are better predictors of behavioral change than self-reporting. In other words, people might accurately report their intentions at the time, but the intentions reported beforehand do not always match a person's later behavior. For example, people might self-report intentions to vote, quit smoking, or lose weight, but then choose not to follow through with the intended behavior. During one study, researchers used functional magnetic resonance imaging to examine smokers' neural responses to watching anti-smoking public service announcements, PSAs. After the smokers viewed the PSAs, the researchers asked them whether they intended to quit smoking. 1 month later, researchers again asked participants about their intentions to quit and about their current smoking behaviors. In addition to asking them questions, investigators obtained urine samples from the study participants so they could objectively measure reductions in nicotine and validate the relationship among brain activation, reported intention to quit smoking, and actual smoking cessation. The researchers were able to identify the unique neural activation pattern in response to the PSAs associated with individuals who reported their intention to quit smoking and who also showed lower nicotine levels during the follow-up. In turn, researchers were able to distinguish this pattern from the neural activation pattern observed in those who had reported an intention to quit smoking, but in fact had not reduced their tobacco use, according to the urinalysis. The revelation of the neural signature associated with those who reduced their tobacco consumption in response to viewing the PSAs could help future efforts to construct effective anti-tobacco smoking messages. The biochemical outcome data, the level of nicotine in the participants' urine, was the ground truth measure for depicting the effectiveness of the message. Unfortunately, not all messages or narratives lend themselves to a biochemical or biophysical ground truth. People constantly take in messaging stimuli. Furthermore, individuals make decisions about future behavior after processing those stimuli. But what occurs in the brain during that process? For example, how can we construct narratives to reduce the audience's likelihood of joining a resistance movement or increase their likelihood of participating for the first time in a national vote or reporting a violent extremist to authorities? Researchers know that digestion of a message likely requires processes involving cognition, emotion, decision-making, identity formation, and memory, but they do not yet understand exactly how these factors interact in general, and more importantly, which specific elements of communications engage certain neural processes for known behaviors. If someone reports feeling empathy when hearing a story about a child with cancer, that individual is more likely to engage in certain behaviors associated with that empathetic response, for example, increased prosocial action. Neuroimaging can assist in identifying brain activation induced by the recipient's exposure to a narrative. In practical terms, operators need an understanding of how narrative-related stimuli can lead to behavioral change, but they do not necessarily need to know the precise neurological mechanisms involved. However, understanding how the narrative-related stimuli link to behavioral changes can aid in narrative development strategies that will elicit a desired behavioral change. These data should be the foundation on which knowledge, tools, training, and measurement of narratives are based. Persuasive communication. A neuroscientific approach alone does not resolve all unknowns with regard to narratives. Rather, neuroscientific insights should be incorporated into the growing field of narrative study to complement insights from psychology, sociology, political science, anthropology, communications, economics, and other fields. Integration of all these fields should lead to a comprehensive understanding of the factors contributing to the efficacy of narratives. Understanding of several components is required to effect desired short- and long-term behavioral change. How individuals receive and process narrative input, the role of individual and group dispositions, motivations, and biases in interaction with a narrative, key factors driving decisions and actions after engagement with a narrative, and the level of engagement with a narrative. The results from neuroscience research related to narratives presented later are not intended to be definitive, but rather informative. A picture is worth a thousand words. The way information is presented can impact how it is processed in the brain. Visual spatial data are handled by visual processing centers that receive the data from the eyes and distinguish shapes, colors, words, and objects to inform, understand, and prepare humans to engage with their environment. Text, on the other hand, is processed in the brain centers associated with language and speech. Communications from the visual processing centers to the amygdala, the emotion processing center of the brain, are speedier regardless of whether the person is making a judgment that involves an evaluation of emotion. On the other hand, when processing the more resource-intensive judgments involving text, responses in the amygdala are slower. Word processing centers are located in the frontal cortex, a part of the brain associated with reward, attention, short-term memory tasks, planning, context updating, and motivation. Resource-intensive processing necessitates more energy, requiring heightened blood flow in the brain. Compared with text, images require less energy, blood flow, and processing power to receive, process, and interpret. Researchers have described pictures as the cognitive glue that connects events to an image-based narrative and increases the intensity of evaluations based on that narrative. There is a clear distinction between reactions to image-based and text-based communications. The brain areas that process images have speedier connections with the amygdala. Image-based communications produce quicker and stronger emotional reactions than do text-based narratives. The latter require more energy and processing power because of the slower connection between the language centers and the amygdala. In general, text-based messages produce slower and weaker emotional reactions. Functionally, this means that images can be used to elicit quicker and stronger emotional reactions than can be elicited by verbal or textual stimuli. Alternatively, when less emotional reactions are desired, a text-based narrative is the better choice. One can see how this plays out in advertising and marketing. Competing brands carry out a war of images rather than words. Budweiser associates itself with Clydesdales, and Coors responds by associating itself with the Rocky Mountains. Coors does not respond with eloquently worded explanations about how its product is superior. Douglas Fugate, in his article on neuromarketing, quotes a major marketing firm, quote, "It's very hard to convince people using words when their organ of decision is primarily visual," end quote. This particular firm advised its clients to make their marketing stimuli more visual and less verbal, drawing on the research described herein and noting that the areas in the brain controlling vision are older from an evolutionary perspective and more numerous than those processing language. Sacred values. Sacred values are resolute values, not susceptible to trade-offs with other values. They might be beliefs that a person would not change or forsake in exchange for money or other material goods. Messages that target one or more of an individual's sacred values have an impact on the individual's interpretation of events. For example, a moral dilemma, such as seeing a person steal merchandise from a store, may challenge one's sacred values. An offer to share the stolen goods as an incentive to ignore the theft may backfire because the observer may hold honesty as a sacred value that transcends economic exchange values. Sacred values can include religious beliefs, national and ethnic identities, or morals. Neuroscience evidence indicates that when individuals process statements concerning sacred values, neural systems are engaged to process evaluations of right versus wrong, temporoparietal junction, and to perform semantic rule retrieval. Semantic rule retrieval occurs when the brain retrieves a rule or value that has been ingrained to correspond with a specific situation, such as how to respond to a salute. The areas of the brain responsible for utility and cost-benefit evaluations are not engaged, suggesting that some values are simply non-negotiable because they are knowledge independent of context. Accordingly, attempts to bargain with these values will generally fail from the start because the parts of the brain that consider alternatives and weigh options are not engaged. Instead, those parts of the brain that determine what is morally right and wrong and call on automatic rules of response are fully engaged. In fact, researchers suggest that efforts to alter sacred values generate hostility in the target audience. This is explained in part as evolutionary biology and in part as genetic predisposition to holding intolerant attitudes. The evolutionary biology theory indicates that sacred values are group-based and that people consider their group very important. Therefore, people will maintain the group's integrity by upholding and defending the group's sacred values, even when those values are irrational. Basically, just as a person would physically defend his or her group against physical threats, a person committed to a sacred value will defend his or her group against psychological and moral threats. In terms of genetic predisposition, individual differences in tolerance are genetically informed, meaning genetics do not necessarily dictate how tolerant a person is, but do inform an individual's likelihood to react violently when threatened, either physically or psychologically. With regards to narratives, these findings suggest that audiences may not be open to new ideas and different values. A common misconception is that every society introduced to liberal democracy will alter its values to match those most common in a liberal democracy. Yet, because efforts to change a group's values can represent a threat to the group in the same way as a physical threat, suggestions for change can be perceived as threats or attacks. It is just as important not to threaten a group's sacred values as it is not to threaten its physical safety. Narratives that advocate or are perceived to advocate altering fundamental sacred values are neurologically blocked. It may be more effective for the operator to either connect the proposed values to existing sacred values or avoid sacred values altogether. Researchers do not fully understand how to motivate people to change sacred values. Understanding approaches that are effective in changing sacred values would be invaluable to advancing effective messaging. Fight or flight. As noted in the preceding section, individuals generally react to psychological and moral threats to their groups and their values in the same way they react to physical threats, namely with hostility. As discussed, researchers propose that this reaction occurs in part because issues involving sacred values bypass the cost-benefit analysis processing center in the brain and instead use the moral reasoning and automatic rule retrieval areas. Researchers have also shown that hostile responses to arguments may occur as part of a fight or flight response, driven by fear and emotion processing in the amygdala, the area of the brain that regulates emotional responses. Projections between the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala facilitate the interaction of cognitive and emotion or fear processing, respectively. Consider a high school basketball player who performs well in practice, but on championship game day is nervous and does not play well. There have been no changes in the player's understanding of the game of basketball or how to play it, but the emotion and stress of the championship game interferes with and reduces the player's performance. Likely, the drive from the amygdala, the fear and emotion processing area, overrides that of the prefrontal cortex, the decision-making area, allowing emotion or fear to contribute to the player's performance, as evidenced by his reduced performance. Some emotional responses, such as fear or anger, engage the sympathetic nervous system, resulting in measurable physiological responses. The sympathetic nervous system is responsible for regulating body functions, such as heart rate, sweating, and digestion, in response to perceived harm or threats. This process is often called the fight or flight response. The amygdala, via emotion and fear processing, can contribute to engaging the sympathetic nervous system. Interestingly, physical threats and psychological threats are not distinguished by the amygdala. And importantly, during fight or flight responses, the body is in a state of hyperarousal. In such a state, it is common for higher-order cognitive functions, such as exploring the details of arguments, distinguishing friend from foe, or engaging in rational thought, to cease. Encountering sacred values in a message disengages the rational components of the brain. The psychological threat engages the sympathetic nervous system, which can lead to hostility. This concept plays an important role, with both short and long-term implications, in messages. In the short term, the audience is not receptive to the message because it clashes with existing beliefs, and when that clash exists, the brain simply does not listen. Instead, it defends. In the long term, quote, unconscious emotional processing in the brain exerts a substantial direct influence on subsequent processing and behavior that is not always mediated by rational thought, end quote, according to Caleb Seifert in his article, Winning the Super Buzz Bowl. This means that emotion processing in response to a narrative can have a substantial direct influence on behavior, as well as on subsequent information processing. In this way, a bad first impression can lead to 1. Behavior in response that is not tempered by rational thought, for instance, a heated reaction, and 2. Biased information processing that creates a barrier for the persuasive message to engage the rational components of the brain. Narratives and information processing. Scholars have categorized the way people process information into 2 possibilities: heuristic processing and systematic processing. Heuristic processing is similar to semantic rule retrieval mentioned previously. It leads to minimal independent analysis by the audience. Systematic processing uses independent, logical analysis of all components of the message, including the environmental context. These categories represent 2 very different modes of processing information that communicators can leverage. A heuristic is a mental shortcut stored in the memory that helps a person reach decision more quickly. Triggering a cue is necessary for the heuristic to operate. However, because heuristics are stored in the memory, they are most often triggered unconsciously. This means that when one is used, it can unintentionally lead to a biased decision. One common heuristic is expert opinion. An expert label is the cue that unconsciously causes the audience to settle on the simple decision rule that expert opinion is trustworthy. Unlike people engaged in heuristic processing, those engaged in systematic processing intensively identify, assess, and analyze all the information presented to them. Audiences engage in systematic processing most often when there is no heuristic or mental shortcut to use. In general, heuristic processing leads to quicker decisions and actions, underestimation of risks, and overemphasis on positive explanations to justify decisions. A person's emotional state also influences whether to use a heuristic or systematic decision-making process. Individuals in a positive mood are more likely to engage in heuristic information processing, whereas individuals in a negative mood are more likely to engage in systematic processing. Communicators can leverage both of these insights according to their desired goal. If a communicator wishes to persuade an audience of a viewpoint, then he or she should aim to trigger heuristic processing. Additionally, because research has indicated that heuristic processing is more likely to occur when individuals are in positive moods, that communicator should either aim to deliver the message when the audience is most likely to be in a positive mood, or embed information or opportunities to create a positive mood with the messaging. Conversely, if a communicator wants to challenge an adversary's message, he or she would seek to disrupt or disable the heuristic cues used by the adversary and pull the audience into systematic processing. Emotional content. Recent research has also shown that certain emotions communicated through messages can impact an audience's receptiveness to messages and likelihood to act. While hatred based on anger or contempt generally does not lead to violence or hostility, hatred based on disgust is more likely to result in violence and hostility. The moral emotion of disgust elicits feelings of repulsion and elimination. In that sense, while anger prepares one to fight, disgust actually moves an individual to repulse and eliminate the cause of the disgust. As a moral emotion, disgust is processed in the regions of the brain devoted to moral beliefs and behavior. Test subjects who had lesions on those regions were incapable of recognizing disgust in others or responding to disgusting stimuli. Additionally, when disgust is focused on a group, all the members are perceived as innately bad and requiring elimination. In this regard, disgust represents a boundary between inaction and action. For communicators, this means that disgust is the more effective emotion for persuading individuals to act against another group or to actively reject another message. Accordingly, narratives aimed at provoking action should focus not on anger or hatred toward the intended target of action, but instead on disgust of that intended target. The origins of disgust that a communicator could leverage will depend on the communicator's cultural knowledge of the audience. Alternatively, if the narrative seeks to end violent actions against a group, the authors should design messages to undermine any disgust or contributors to disgust existing between the groups. If the moral emotion of disgust is the line between inaction and action, then much can be gained by facilitating or inhibiting feelings of disgust in groups. Reward seeking. Humans have evolved to engage in behaviors that result in reward and to avoid behaviors that potentially incur a loss. Researchers have discovered that when individuals perceive the potential for a reward, the brain's reward-seeking system is activated. The chemical dopamine plays a significant role related to reward-motivated behavior. When dopamine is released in the brain, an individual experiences intense feelings of well-being. The desire to feel the effects of dopamine release can lead individuals to engage in dangerous or sensation-seeking behaviors at the potential expense of their well-being. Indeed, researchers have found that individuals participating in reward-seeking behaviors have lower impulse control and enhanced reward sensitivity and are more likely to prefer immediate reward at the cost of long-term adverse consequences. Some industries, such as the gambling industry, have leveraged these findings by designing their activities, services, websites, and interactive features to provide users with numerous small rewards, thereby engaging the reward motivation brain centers and increasing the likelihood of continued engagement. Continually achieving low-level rewards maintains a user's interest, whereas requiring a user to wait patiently for a higher-level reward causes the user to lose interest. It is important to note that the reward can be physical, monetary, or social. For instance, receiving positive feedback to posts on social media sites can incentivize a user to post similar messages. Because positive feedback elicits dopamine and oxytocin in the author, his or her posts might grow more bold and extremist. Communicators can also leverage this understanding of human reward-seeking habits by designing messages that provide audience members with rewards. However, reward bounties are not the best strategy. Instead, practitioners in other arenas have discovered that small, incremental rewards gain favor and maintain attention more effectively than a large reward after completing a long, arduous task. Similarly, graphic designers have recognized that individuals are deterred by large blocks of text. Most segment the material into manageable portions so the audience is rewarded after finishing each segment, providing incentive to continue. Narrative transportation. Narrative transportation refers to the experience of getting lost in a story. The term transportation was introduced to explain that immersive experience in which, for all intents and purposes, one feels as if he or she has moved or transported out of the real world and into the story world. Scholars describe it this way because the hallmarks of transportation include empathizing with the characters, engaging in extensive mental imagery of the story's events and surroundings, and losing access to real-world information, both physiologically and psychologically. Importantly, audiences that have experienced transportation return to the real world changed in strong and long-lasting ways. Narrative transportation does not trigger careful evaluation or intense scrutiny of arguments. This means that we can have transportive experiences with content that otherwise may not make sense or be rational. Researchers refer to this as narrative persuasion, within which are two components, the affective and the cognitive. The affective component refers to the empathy experienced by the audience. Empathy represents the ability to experience the narrative from the protagonist's point of view. With empathy, an audience does not feel for the characters, but instead feels with the characters. The cognitive component refers to the change in information processing. During narrative transportation, audiences experience decreased analytical processing. Both components are integral to effective narrative persuasion. Unlike other persuasive media, narrative persuasion does not present arguments. V. Romero, in his article, Deterrence Via Narrative, asserts, quote, "Instead, narratives present information and positions that are true within the context of the story," end quote. Research indicates that transportation requires accepting the story's world and that transported audiences return to the real world without abandoning the information and positions from the story world. It would seem, then, that transportive experiences engage our memory processing. Transported audiences disengage from the real world, engage in a story world, accept the story world's beliefs and positions as valid, and upon return to the real world, maintain belief in the validity of those story world beliefs and positions. Experts continue to study the underlying neurological mechanisms of transportation, but research has already revealed some key observations and likely explanations. For instance, while audience members are viewing a transportive narrative, their brains are less sensitive to stimuli that are outside the story world. In other words, the transportation experience consumes attention capacity, reducing attention resources available for current real-world events. Also, transportation is associated with reduced activity in the default mode network, the brain network activated during self-reflection and self-referential thought. The reduced activity in this network supports the notion that transportation is characterized by detachment from the real world. There are also several common characteristics of transportive narratives. The characteristics are divided into those relating to the narrative and others relating to the audience. Narrative characteristics include identifiable characters, an imaginable plot, and verisimilitude, or lifelikeness. An identifiable character is one with whom the audience can affiliate. If the character is foreign to the audience, then the narrative is less likely to be transportive. Identifiability of the character enables the audience to empathize and experience the story from the character's point of view and with the character's biases. An imaginable plot requires descriptions of settings and events along a temporal sequence, evoking mental imagery for the audience. As with empathy, it is through mental imagery that audiences engage with the story's world as though it were real. Audiences that do not engage in mentally imagining the narrative world and the plot are less likely to be transported. Finally, verisimilitude refers to the story's realism, but in a broad sense. Transportive narratives should emphasize believability rather than logical consistency and lack of contradictions. Greater verisimilitude increases the likelihood that an audience will suspend reality and be transported by the narrative. Audience characteristics related to transportive narratives include familiarity, attention, and transportability. An audience must have some prior knowledge of or personal experience with the narrative's topic or genre to be transported by the narrative. The more foreign the narrative's characters, setting, circumstances, or topic, the less likely the narrative is to transport its audience. Accordingly, effective narratives need to be based on at least a minimum level of cultural knowledge. Additionally, an audience must be able to focus and concentrate on the narrative, or have a motivation to pay attention to it. Distraction reduces the likelihood that the audience will be transported by the narrative. Finally, for an audience to be transported, it needs to have a propensity for being transported. This is a matter of individual neurological capacity for empathy and mental imagery. The more capable a person is at empathizing with another or constructing mental imagery, the more likely he or she will be transported by a narrative.